My name is Victor Kubik, President of the United Church of God. With us today is Scott Ashley, who is Managing Editor of Beyond Today magazine. Also, he is pastor of three congregations in Colorado, in Denver, Colorado Springs, and Frisco, who is very interested in archaeology that started in his boyhood days at age 13 in Alabama. So he's joining us via Skype here today. Welcome, Scott.
Thanks very much, Vic. Good to be with you this morning.
Well, we're very happy to have you here because you have just attended a Biblical Archaeology Society conference at their annual meeting in the Denver area. From this particular conference where you attended, what did you say, 25 or so presentations, you also teach an Ambassador Bible class on the harmony of the Gospels. Has there been anything here that you could add to the class from what you had learned?
I can. One of actually, the first lecture that I attended was given by a scholar by the name of Mike Lacona. He has done a lot of analysis of the Gospels compared to other biographers who wrote in say, from the 1st or 2nd century B.C. through the 1st or 2nd century A.D., primarily Roman writers. And he gave an interesting comparison to the methodologies that were used by Roman biographers compared to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And one criticism that people will see, and some Bible critics have made a lot of money selling books discrediting the Gospels, and one of their big arguments is that, the earliest copies of the Gospels we have that date to, the 2nd, 3rd centuries A.D., don't list the name of the author on them. The Gospel of Mark doesn't list Mark on there as the author. Matthew, same thing. So Bible critics will say that, well, we don't really know who wrote those Gospels. They were written anonymously centuries after these things supposedly happened, so we really can't trust them. Well, Dr. Lacona has analyzed this and learned that of the biographies of those of that time period, several centuries in there, no biographers, virtually no biographers, put their name on their works. For instance, Plutarch, a famous Roman biographer, wrote dozens and dozens of biographies of ancient people, and so something like 60, of which about 50 or so have survived, and not once does he identify himself as the author of it. We know he's the author because other people quoted from him and said he was the author. Yeah. Julius Caesar, the famous Julius Caesar, wrote about the Gallic Wars in Gaul, modern-day France. He wrote in the third person, even though he was the one he was writing about. He wrote in the third person and never mentioned himself by name as the author. Mm-hmm. However, we do know from early historians like Papias, who wrote in the early 2nd century, he tells us who wrote these Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and gives the sources for those. So I found that quite interesting, and it totally undermines one of the arguments that the critics make against the authenticity of the Gospels.
And where is this leading to? Is it creating a mindset change among scholars, or do some of the preconceived or the biases that they have had all along persist through? What did you notice?
People have been critical of the Bible, of the biblical record. But what is happening now, more and more, we're really in a golden age of archaeology. They're in the Holy Land right now. Dozens of digs going on at any given time all over the country. And more they're finding evidence that the biblical record is true.
I know that in 1969 when I visited, it seemed like the whole country was mapped out for archaeology.
They have found literally dozens of inscriptions or artifacts bearing the names of specific individuals who are mentioned in the Bible. And combining with these new techniques, too, they're able to gain so much more information and finding things that finding information that was overlooked or there was no way to capture previously.
What are some of the techniques and how do they figure things with one city building on top of another, where sometimes there's been as many as 10 rebuildings of a city?
That's a great question, and you're right. As you travel around the land of Israel, you learn to recognize what is called a tell, spelled T-E-L, or in Arabic T-A-L, sometimes T-E-L-L or T-A-L-L, and it's a flat-topped hill. And it's gotten to the point where I can pick them out all over the land there quite easily. And these are buried cities. And one way to understand them would be to use the analogy of a layer cake, that there are just different layers there where cities have existed, were destroyed, and they would generally come back and rebuild on the same site. So you would have... you mentioned 10 layers. That's fairly common. Some go up to 20 layers or more.
Wow.
Like at Megiddo. Megiddo was a very strategically important area militarily, and it was fought over and destroyed about 20 times.
That's amazing.
And so some of the new techniques that I learned about that are being done now is their preferred material for carbon 14 dating is olive pits.
Mm-hmm.
Used to do a lot of carbon 14 dating with trees, but the problem with that is if you take a tree specimen of carbon 14, the tree may have lived 200, 300, 500 years.
Uh-huh.
Only live for 1 year. So they can date it down much more. Now there's still a range within carbon 14 dates, but whereas the range used to be a couple of hundred years with a tree, now it's down to maybe a few dozen years.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really fascinating. The amount of knowledge that's increased since 1969, that's my benchmark year, has been phenomenal, right?
That's true. It's interesting how much archaeology has changed. I actually started on my first archaeological dig when I was age 13. I grew up in northern Alabama, and there were a lot of American Indian artifacts that we would find out in our garden, things like that. So my family got interested in it when I was a child. So I was actually working my first dig age 13 in junior high school. So it is astonishing how much it has changed just in the last 10 years or so. What's the latest in a time period that's been somewhat of a black hole in archaeology, and that's the period of the establishment of the kingdoms of Israel and Judah, specifically under David and Solomon. But what they're now finding from archaeology is that during the period of David and Solomon, there's a tremendous change in who is living in that area of the Roman plains. The Philistine occupation disappears. The population plunges. Cities, towns are abandoned that were formerly Philistine. And the population plunges by about 90% in all these areas, and it is replaced by Israelite occupation. And we know this now in digs from the last few years. They know this because the pottery changes from Philistine to Israelite, the architecture changes from Philistine to Israelite, and the diet changes. How do we know the diet changes? Well, because the Philistines ate a lot of pig. That was a major part of their diet. But the Israelites are following the biblical laws against not eating that, so pig bones disappear during that period. And, of course, in the Bible, we know that David becomes king and consolidates his kingdom, defeats the Philistines, and then the Israelites move out into this land that was formerly occupied by the Philistines and Canaanites. So that was a major takeaway that was discussed by three of the presenters there.
Uh-huh. So it was a deportation or pretty much a migration of the Philistines out and an income of Israelites into the place, right?
Exactly, yes, and that it exactly corresponds with what we see in the biblical record, too.
Well, this has been a fascinating discussion. I think that we'll kind of end it right here for part one. We do want to have a part two to continue our discussion. And so thanks for joining us on Inside United. Come back again soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.